I'm Addison Brazil. Reef Club, the podcast, starts now. Welcome back to another episode of Grief Club, the podcast, where I take parts of my book, First Year of Grief Club, A Gift from a Friend Who Gets It, and use them as launching points for deeper conversations with friends. I've only done that intro 1,000 times, and here we are with a blooper. Today, I am welcoming a friend and very special guest, Dr. Erin Baker. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Thank you. So to get started, because I tend to avoid this part sometimes, I always just want to jump in and check in, also give our listeners the chance to do a conscious emotional check-in as well. So Erin, if you take a deep breath and settle into the space, in one word, how are you feeling physically right now?
Tired.
Say jittery. In one word, how are you feeling emotionally right now?
Mixed.
You say tender, and I want to add like tender. Dash AF. I don't know if that's still one word. And in one word, how are you feeling mentally right now?
Energized.
I'm going to say nervous. Nervous with excitement for what we're going to get into today. So we stumbled upon this last week where for fun, on one of the episodes, Patty and I did acrostic poems for each other to try to like describe each other. I'm not going to make you do that for me because I know we're friends, but we're not that close. But I was wondering if it would be fun for you to kind of spell out Erin and build us a little acrostic poem just for the listeners to kind of get to know you in this moment. What comes up for each of those letters?
Yeah. Does it have to be one word for each letter?
You can do a sentence. There's no rules. There's going to be no rules today.
I hate rules. Great. Okay. Erin. Eclectic, radically authentic, inspired and inspiring, and neurotic comes to mind. I'm being really honest.
That works.
Yeah.
So as always, rather than talking about you in front of you, from what I know of you, there's so many things that excite me about you personally and professionally, but I just want to give you a few minutes off the top, like I do with every guest, to let you kind of honor your journey openly. That can include your grief process and your grief journey, but it also doesn't have to. Just sort of, how do we get to the Erin we're meeting today? Not that that's a simple question, but.
Yeah. The question is, what Erin are you meeting today? Because what Erin are you meeting in this moment? I have to check in on who's here, because I think there's lots of different parts of me that are here. I'm going to check in and see what I want to share. I think what's really present for me is we're recording this in February, and I just 2 weeks ago celebrated my mom's 75th birthday. And 6 years ago, she went into the hospital with back pain and almost didn't come out. And the back pain turned into spinal staph infection and spinal meningitis. And she was in the ICU for 5-6 weeks. We weren't sure if she was going to wake up. She was comatose after they did some back surgery to get rid of the staph infection. And she did wake up eventually in March, but she was told she was never going to move again. And even before she woke up, we had to make some big decisions about whether we were honoring her wishes to stay alive on life support. She had a feeding tube and a ventilator. And it was 6 months of rehabbing and literally learning to move every finger, toe, body part. And there was just, you know, speaking of grief, so much grief around, you know, almost losing my mom and what that could mean. And then grief around the mobility and the life that she lost. And she's doing wonderfully now. I mean, she's in a wheelchair for you know, probably the duration of her life. And she got back all of her movement except that, which I think is absolutely miraculous given doctors weren't sure that she'd get any of it back. She's mentally, emotionally intact. But that journey, I was working at Facebook at the time and traveling between Facebook in San Francisco and in Tucson, where she was rehabbing, where she lives, and going like, what am I doing with my life? What's the impact I want to make? And it led me down this entire path that I won't go into super detail with of, that's when I left my, I took a while to get there, but I left my corporate ladder climbing, started my own coaching business, and really committed to joy as front and center, because we just never know when we're going to feel that opposite-ish emotion. It's not completely opposite, but that really hard emotion of grief. And that's just continued to be my beacon. And I've lost joy so many times since then. And it's not a permanent, joy is not a thing you get to and, you know, never, you're never sad again. You're never grieving again. But that really is what brings me today. You can see if you're watching a recording, I have a little neon sign that says joy. And it becomes, it's become my compass in everything. And there's a lot going on for me personally right now. And all I'm talking about in my own inner system is, how do we journey back to joy through grief and pain and sorrow? And how do we hold space for both?
Mm-hmm. I think this is a great time to let the listeners know too, that you wrote an amazing book called Joyful AF. So we're going to talk a lot about joy today. And one thing, I've read the book, obviously I was rereading it over the last couple of days, to try to spend a little bit of time with you in preparation for this. And one thing, I was going through it and I literally started highlighting everything. I'm like, oh, I want to read this quote. Oh, I want to read this quote, which I never really actually do that with guests. But then I was like, wow, how about you don't read her quotes at her, at them, excuse me, Aaron. And we can also get into that as well, that correction. But how about, you don't read their quotes at them. But this one I really wanted to read, and maybe we can open up a little bit as you honor your journey and get into introducing us to your pronouns as well, and that journey as well. People often mistakenly equate courage with fearlessness. So they see my courage and think I must be fearless. Can we open that up a little bit?
Oh, yes. Yes. Right. And I just want to invite anyone who's listening out here, think of the people you know who are courageous. And what do you associate with that? You see on the outside what appears to be fearlessness. Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, I can think of, we can talk about my gender journey, right? So people see that I came out as not straight, and I don't have the word for what that was back then, but not straight, queer, lesbian, whatever it is, in 2004. And a lot of people saw that as, wow, you're so courageous in this particular time. This was before, well before gay marriage was legal in the United States. Canada was way ahead of our country. And then 2018, I mess up my timelines, is when I came out as non-binary. And it was a long journey of, you know, I don't feel male, I don't feel female. What the heck does that mean? There's this other gender, but do I feel like I even fit in that category? I even in 2018 had top surgery to align my body to that sense of non-binary gender. And they, them pronouns is actually even more recent than that. But through all of this, everybody looks at Aaron and goes, damn, what a courageous person, right? Mm-hmm. To break the norms in 2004, before, you know, gay marriage was really a thing. And, you know, there was still a lot of discrimination, still is a lot of discrimination going on. And then, wow, how courageous to, you know, have top surgery and align your body and to be using these pronouns and, you know, being this person in the world. And I have to tell people, I know this sentence follows in the book, I was scared shitless, excuse my language, but every time. Courage is not the absence of fear. It's having something that you want on the other side of that fear so badly that you're willing to feel it and face it and go through with it. And for me, and when I think about both coming out as queer, gay, lesbian, and non-binary. It's the joy on the other side of being able to be who I am, right? And with my gender, it's the joy of waking up every day and looking in the mirror and looking at my like body and being like, hey, you, like, that's you, right? There was something that wasn't me before when I had the, you know, the breast that I was born with. And so, yeah, courage is usually feeling the fear on the path to joy.
I love that so much. And it reminds me, now I'm paraphrasing because I wouldn't allow myself to write everything down, but this idea that we avoid a lot of things thinking we're seeking joy, but we underestimate the lack of joy that will be felt from the dissatisfaction of ignoring that fear or not stepping into it.
Right. There's the joy is on the other side of that fear. And yes, this idea, whether it's, you know, me talking about my identity or a goal we have, right? I mean, I think I share in the book a couple of times, one of my first mentors said, the most boring thing you can do is set out for a goal or to do something and then have no problems on the way and achieve it. And yet that's what we're all trying to do, right? We're all like, no obstacles, no challenges, no failure, right? Because if we have those, what does that mean about us, right? But yeah, if you set out to do something and you have none of those, you know, again, I'm going to invite the listeners to think about those times. How satisfied were you? How proud of yourself were you? And then think about all those times you faced fear. You faced an obstacle you didn't think you could get through. You've failed over and over again to finally get to whatever that thing is. And you're going, wow, I'm so freaking proud of myself. And there's the joy that gets experienced by that. And so we really do need to, you know, be willing to face negativity, whether it's a negative emotion or a negative experience, in order to feel the true joy and satisfaction of our accomplishments or our evolution or our growth, whatever it is.
I love this. Okay, so I'm going to take the car and drive it to the intersection of IFS joy and grief. But before I do,
wonderful.
I want to stick to the show structure and ask you the question I ask everybody, which is if a child or someone who had no knowledge of what the word grief meant walked up to you and asked you, what's grief mean? What's that word mean? What would be your pedestrian response to that?
Yeah, I'm checking in right now because I'm working through a massive amount of grief in my personal life. Grief is the ability to feel so deeply, how do I say it? I have a feeling that's not words yet, so let me just slow myself down. Grief is such a deep, deep feeling of love that you know you won't feel the same way ever again because you've lost something or someone.
I'll just turn this off now and go back to bed. Oh, wow, that's beautiful. That's
you've really reached beautiful. Grief Club. Leave a message after the beep.
Hey, Grief Club, it's me. Yeah, I know you probably thought you'd get a break from me during this ad, but sorry, it's me. I wanted to take a minute to tell you about one of my favorite places in the world, Modern Elder Academy. It is the most beautiful location in Baja, Mexico, and I've gone multiple times. I've been in both their sabbatical sessions, which allow you to just go down there, kind of set up home base and take part in deep conversations, connecting with other like-minded people, yoga, activities. You do as much or as little as you want. You can even work while you're doing it. It's amazing. They also have one-week workshops that just get you so intimate with where you are and who you are in your life right now. I can't tell you how much wisdom I fed on whenever I am in Baja in that magic. Also, how much food I fed on, because the food is beyond. Chef Tony is the man. and I literally return year after year for that food. Anyway, please check it out. It is my home away from home, and they are always so good to me. The staff, the founders, absolutely everybody. Modern Elder Academy, or as we lovingly called it, MEA. Okay, so I sort of mentioned it there, that this intersection.
Yeah.
You know, so first of all, I just want you, you've dedicated a lot of your life, a lot of your learning, and a lot of the work you do to IFS, which when I first heard that, I was at a lunch with a friend of ours and I didn't even know what it meant. So I would love, in the second acronym / acrostic poem of the day, for you to break down, what is IFS?
Sure. So I'm going to share something that I was just in a training mentoring some people in IFS, which is the real acronym is Internal Family Systems. But I have to share that she wrote a poem and she made IFS both intense fucking shit and I feel safe.
I love it. I'm like, and yet again, folks, with my friend group, we have reached our explicit rating.
Yes.
What did they talk about on this grief podcast? This little E beside all that. So, right, real life grief.
But these are those two really, really resonate for me. So internal family systems, if you think about, you know, our internal world, just it's sort of natural for us to speak in language of a part of me feels this way, right? A part of me really misses my mom, right? Another part of me doesn't miss my mom, or part of me wants to eat this sandwich, the other part of me wants to eat this hamburger, right? And those are like surface level things, but we are made up of all these internal parts of ourselves, right? So they can be thoughts, they can be feelings. I think of them as little sub personalities of us. So like, I have a little part of me that's a perfectionist, right? And I have a little part of me that's really vigilant, looking out for danger. I have a part of me that feels not good enough. And all internal family systems is this idea of like, what if we don't look at ourselves as a singular thing, but made up of all of these different parts of ourselves? And it really fits with my notion of non-binary gender, right? Because there's a part of me that's female and a part of me that's male. Part of me that doesn't even know what gender is. And how can we relate to those parts as if like we're relating to a family system, right? There's, you know, in the world, there's different dynamics that happen between mothers and fathers and sons and daughters and all of that. And how do we relate to those parts of ourselves to create more internal harmony? And that includes feeling all of our feelings, right? And not suppressing, say, grief or pain, not avoiding it. And how do we build our relationship with those different parts of ourselves and welcome them, right? How many of us are trying to hold down those I'm not good enough parts or the shame parts, right? And rather than hold them down, get to know them. Hey, shame. Now, what are you here for? What are you protecting me from? Because they're all there with some sort of job, just like in any family system. A mom has a job, a dad has a job. Well, my shame has a job, right? My perfectionist part has a job, all trying to keep me safe so that I feel safe. So the goal is to get to know these parts of ourselves and learn, you know, when did those parts come to be protecting us. Sometimes we're working with very young parts of ourselves. Something happened to, you know, make these parts of ourselves go into protection mode. Sometimes we're dealing with parts that are passed down, generational trauma, generational beliefs, or cultural beliefs. You know, we're all swimming in the soup of white supremacy culture and colonialism and capitalism. And when we can get to know those things, we can sort of like, almost like we're carrying a backpack full of rocks. We can like release those rocks that are weighing us down one rock at a time and get back to sort of who we naturally are at the core.
Wow. I love that. I love that. I am also learning so much with the listeners. I specifically wanted you on when we did the deeper dive off the week in the book where I bring up bargaining. Right away, like it was one of those ones that just was like, oh, that's when I want Aaron to come on. Because there's sort of the Kubler-Ross bargaining idea, you know, the stage of grief, which, you know, in recent years, we've kind of dispelled these stages of grief. You know, they're secular, they happen, they come and go, of course, which makes sense with everything that you're saying. I find quite personally, and people listening may relate to this, that in what you're saying, I find that's where I'm doing the most begging, the most bargaining, and the most just trying to be, which is the offering that I put out in that week, whichever week it is, where it's just beg, bargain, be, and just allowing that process to actually happen. And for a long time in my grief process, especially, I definitely shut down the parts of me that needed to bargain with either something bigger than myself or within myself, but needed to bargain around what happened or needed to beg for a reversal, for a shift, whether it was, you know, a grief process that was around a life event, like a relationship where the person was still living or a change of job, or in those death situations where in the book I mentioned, you know, there was a part of me with my brother that needed to make the offer. Like, and I, at that point, what I would have called God at that time, to a higher power, saying, I don't care if I don't know the difference. If I wake up tomorrow in the ground, just put him back.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just my truth. Like, I had to try to make the deal. And then later in life, when I lost my father and my friend, there was a part of me that felt very silly and wanted to skip that, wanted to skip honoring the part of me that still wanted to beg, that still wanted to bargain, that still that hope monster in me that just went, just try. Maybe something will happen. Maybe lightning will strike you out. You know, and it became this thing where it was so unhealthy at a certain point to avoid the bargaining that I knew would not result in the result. However, it was still in the natural process that those parts of me needed to know they at least tried. I needed to know I tried. Like, God, what if I do ask the sky and I get them back? I got to try, you know, and those, what's interesting about grief when it compounds like that, at least in my case, is the parts of you that try to be smarter than those genuine parts that still need to do the very, very human thing. So everything that you talk about just like sort of translates, and then just seeing this exact through line of really how that would be interrupting any chance I had at joy for quite a long time.
Sure. And there's a metaphor that my wife gave me when I was thinking about IFS about 6 months ago. And she talks about how when you're swimming in a pool with a kickboard, and you're holding it down underwater, like how effortful is it for you to hold that kickboard underwater, right? All your energy is going there. So you're not enjoying the pool. You're not looking around and you know, enjoying the sunshine and all that. And then eventually the kickboard is going to like slip out from under you. It's going to come to the surface. It's probably going to knock you in the head, right?
Yeah.
And that's not fun either. And, you know, you can think of, you know, grief, these parts, like how often do we try to hold down, especially negative feelings, right? We try to hold them down because we either don't want to feel them or we feel we're not supposed to still be feeling them. I should be over this by now. And then they come out at the most random and sideways times and take us out. And so there's a lot of health, right, into welcoming that kickboard to the surface. What do you have to teach me, right? And swimming with it and getting to know it and seeing if there's anything it can help you let go of. Because, yeah, the more you can let go of those burdens and just feel the feelings, that's when the space for joy comes in. Mm. But you can't even be like on the radar for joy if all you're trying to do is hold down that kickboard of grief.
Right. And I feel like people watching this will be able to see me taking deep breaths and nodding. But for those of you listening, the reason I'm quiet is because when you're in Erin's presence, it's kind of like when for years I sort of, you really have to sift through and find what works for you when you're finding a coach or a mental health professional or even peer support and friends, you know. And then there's these moments where you get into that office or that space that's safe and you know the person that you're standing in front of knows how to help you. And you're like, exactly what you're saying, kicking in the water, like, oh God, get me out of here. I thought this is what I was looking for. But, you know,
it's
that sort of, oh, this is the real stuff feeling. And there's sort of this quietness of one part of me telling all my other parts, you better be quiet. Don't say anything. Don't do anything. Which is, it's just funny to like notice that how it shows up, which brings me to my dare of the day. I want to preface by saying to everybody that, although this will come out in a few weeks, that we are recording on Valentine's Day. And usually I like put all this stuff out there and I'm like, I'm pretty good about it. I don't really usually have like a reaction to Valentine's Day, at least not as strongly as I'm having today. And it's this, it's interesting because it's like a grief sandwich. It's sort of, I feel grief around maybe the partnership I could have had if I didn't have to honor my grief. And that's like really messy. And there's a lot of parts, you know, that, you know, because there's this part of me that feels like, no, you honored, you know, the parts of you you needed to honor in order to get here. And then there's other parts that were like, well, couldn't you have healed faster? Because even though you apparently did all this deep healing, we're alone. And it's very interesting. As I'm saying this, I'm also a beginner listener to this. We'll see if producer Addison later wants this to be public knowledge, but it's this interesting, we talked on last week's episode with Chip Conley, like about the swirl and how like, rather than having stages of grief, I talk about these swirls where it's sort of a swirl, which is perfect for this episode too, of all the stages at once, you know, the bargaining, the anger, the sadness, like it's just this swirl, the cyclone kind of feeling that you're living in. So we checked in the top of the episode in the way that I always check in, but our future guest, Dr. Mandy Leto, has dared me to allow you to walk me through, and for our listeners' benefit, kind of me checking in right now through the way that you might, through this IFS lens. I have a feeling I'm going to be using the second acronym after this, not the first one.
Yeah, we'll see. So one of the things I really appreciate about IFS is it's a very embodied practice. And so just take a deep breath. And as you slow down and become aware of where you are in space, in your chair, in your body, begin to notice any sensations that are in or around your body. And if one particularly sticks out as a sensation that's calling you, notice if there are any thoughts or feelings associated with that. If you feel open to sharing, let me know.
Yeah, I'm being drawn mostly to a tightness in my chest. And if I'm being honest, it's like a, why do we have to do this today? The bed was so comfortable this morning. I feel fake safe in this moment.
Yeah. You just show that tightness in your chest a little appreciation for sharing its truth with you. What do you notice about that tightness now?
It's dissipating slightly. It's pushing back and saying, be a little bit more honest. And I think that if I'm checking in fully with myself, this is something that a lot of people might really resonate, but I'm a little still stuck on when I messed up your pronouns earlier. And I feel weird. Like I you know, I want to toot my LGBTQ like spokesperson self and say all these things, but instead I'd rather just like show up to that. And that's something that it's really, I don't know why it's hanging like shame in my chest, and you know mm-hmm. better, and you know, this weird, it's tangled in with my queer shame. You know, it has maybe has nothing to do with offending you so much as it's like some sort of like representation of not honoring myself and not, you know, in passing honoring you.
Yeah, great noticing, right? That it has a historic context to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's that part of you that's really feeling that shame, afraid of that you mess up?
That goes back to when I said sort of that fake safety. It's like having like four walls around you. I've set up this safe space physically right now in my life that I've just landed in, and then in this conversation, and then suddenly a part of me was feeling unsafe that I couldn't admit I felt like I messed up. And I just feel so repelled by sitting in any sort of fake safety that it's like the other part of me is like, say what you're feeling, and then the benefit of being in that safe space versus keeping it like 60% safe and then, you know, dwelling on this for the next few days in quiet moments and subconsciously.
Mm. Yeah. So can you ask that part you're referring to, that sort of feeling fake safe? What does it need from you or me in this moment to feel real safe?
Honesty. And I'm just gonna say what's coming up, but no orchestration or like fixing. Honesty and being willing to sort of, in this Valentine's Day way, like show up fully, honestly, as I am, and sort of trusting that will be safe and that is enough, or that the discomfort, like you said earlier, is worth, you know, the satisfaction that comes with, you know, facing that. The other part of me is yelling, stop trying to be so smart. Just be raw.
Yeah, I really appreciate that part. It wants to keep chiming in, and see if we can just give us a little space to be with this other part. Mm-hmm. So this part has made a request of you to be more honest. Mm-hmm. Does that feel like something you're able to honor?
Yeah, a little bit terrifyingly so, but yes.
Cool. I wonder if it would feel good just to send some gratitude and appreciation for the way it showed up and for what it was willing to share and ask for.
Yeah, that one feels more like a child asking for something. Then it's a lot easier sometimes to dismiss the more adult analytical ones.
Yes.
But when it's that honest sort of child kind of showing up, it's this, which happens a lot in my grief and happened a lot last year while I was nomadic and learning, but just this voice kind of saying, you said when you were finished succeeding, you said that you would just do the things we know our love, our safety, our, you know, joy, you know, and it's like, dead, dad. It's like this weird tugging.
And what you're describing, I know for some people can sound a little out there, but when we do that inner work, a lot of times people will find that these parts of themselves feel very young. And oftentimes the part started, you know, doing whatever it's doing for your entire system at a young age, right? And so it is kind of frozen in time. And so a lot of healing work is going back to those younger years, understanding what happened at that point that, you know, now that part is, you know, online and doing this protection of the system. And then there's a lot of ways we can just sort of do some mental corrective experiences that then again unburden these younger parts of us to create and usually create more space for joy, actually.
Makes perfect sense. And I can see for anyone listening too that, you know, there's this inner dialogue right now, even as I'm doing this, of, and maybe people who listen to every episode may feel this way with me too, where it's like, oh, I wish, you know, the other Addison was here right now, like the one who just would have like all the questions for us, like, you know, the connector and the curator. And there's a part of me that like out of service wanted that Addison to be what was here when the red light went on today. And I think that is one of the hardest parts about sort of that bargaining and being within grief is, you know, allowing that this is where we're at, you know, this is truly, you know, checking in, you know, and I can see how checking in that way is so powerful for someone if they kind of went back and listened to just the prompts and kind of took out my answers there, how that's a totally different, and with begging, like I would take that forward with, okay, yeah, like, what do you want to beg for? You know, what is the bargain? I'll hear it out, hear that part of myself out of, okay, yeah, you know, without judgment, going, yeah, okay, that makes sense. Yeah, I take that deal too.
Sure. And you can even ask questions like, why are you showing up right now? You know, because, you know, it's not like we're these seas of multiple parts that are always active, right? Like sometimes I say, who's here today, right? Who wants to get on their soapbox and tell me something? And there may be a reason, right? Well, I'm begging because actually, Addison, you haven't been letting yourself feel, or that may not be the exact thing, but like there may be some insight you might get of like, oh, okay. And then, yeah, okay, go ahead. What do you need to beg for? Like, say, get on your soapbox and say what you need to say. And sometimes what's so beautiful about if you let these parts, you know, swim at the surface instead of kickboarding, you know, holding them down, is that they may just say what they need to say. And then they sort of fade away into the background, almost like, you know, sometimes when you just have that really good cry and it's like, you think if you cry, you're just going to get stuck in the emotions, but actually like you cry it out and you go, oh wow, I just feel so much like almost cleansed. The same thing can happen when you start talking to different parts of yourself. Like they say something and then you feel, oh, I just feel so much better. Thanks for letting me know. All right. See you another time.
I love that. I love that. Yeah. That gentleness. And for anyone listening, that the only way I've even been able to sort of tap into this, and so much of this came from like sort of back translating when, you know, our friend Mandy Leto first spoke to me about you, was going like, oh, I've been like weirdly doing that without knowing this was a thing, where I'm, you know, dealing with these parts. And there was this whole stage in my life where anybody who knows me at this time was like, it was sort of like my inner child and this other child who I treated equally and loved equally as sort of the older co-parenting child were at odds. And there was just these times in London where I was writing and I felt like they were both in the room. And one was like, I don't care about your achievements or anything that you've done. I just want love and to laugh and joy. It's been a hell of a ride. It's 13 years of grief. And the other one just like being like, you know, what are you doing? What is success? Are we set up? Like, is there safety? Like just sort of, you know, and And it's just like that interesting sort of single parent where it's so easy to like name one of them, like sort of the inner critic or the ego, and like dispel mm-hmm. them, because we see a lot of that. But then when I translate it into like, no, that's my older child. I can't just get rid of them. They're valid. Like what they're mm-hmm. saying has a lot of meaning. And it was like my first child in a way. It's very, I answer to that child before, you know, this inner child. Yeah. So like, you know, it's when you put it in that context of, you know, loving both your children equally or all of your children, right. like it just became something very different for me. So if that's helpful at all for other people, where it's not like this one's bad and this one's good, or this is the whiny baby, this is the adult, or, you know, when I had to go, well, like looking at my mom and the way she loved all of us equally, no matter how different we were and how we all always had such different opinions about everything. And I don't know how she did it, but they were all honored, you know, and listened to, but not like you're right and they're wrong. You know, there wasn't that.
Totally. And, you know, when you start thinking about both your older child and the younger child, just want to know what was best for Addison, right? And they have different ideas about what's best for Addison. And so that's where, you know, these internal, we all have internal conflicts, right? That's what happens, is in any part of us that's coming up at any time just wants what's best for us. Now they come to have a belief about what's best. They're right. And part of the journey is letting them know that, no, we're safe to do something different. Or maybe, you know, if you'd spent some more time with, you know, that older child and younger child kind of, you know, in the same room talking to each other, you might find, oh, they want the exact same thing. Right. But they have different strategies towards it. And like, how can you create an inner compromise that honors both of their wishes? Right. And so I think that's a beautiful like image, right? Is that, oh, even the parts that we really hate about ourselves, the shame or the one that can't stop like scrolling TikTok because that numbs us out, right? Or, you know, the one that like, you know, spouts off in anger accidentally. Even those parts that we really, really hate and we really wish we could just like kickboard them, right? Or just completely like cut them out of our system. They're all there for a reason. And so part of it is when we can welcome and get to know them, we can help them see they don't necessarily have to do all those extreme things for us. Or maybe there is a good time to numb out on TikTok, but not like 4 hours every day, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's such an amazing example, because we all have those two parts of us in this day and age where, you know, and even I like judge very harshly the part of me that does sort of scroll. And, you know, sometimes it felt like social media did start with me as this way to connect and to champion others. And it was genuine in so many ways. And lately there's just this part of me that's like, dude, this is Candy Crush. And I know, because people say, oh, I sent you that, and I have no memory of it. I know I watched it. I know I digested it, but it's become like just literally that scrolling mechanism in some ways. And it's that other part of me going, this isn't leading. This isn't paving. This isn't creating the things you know you want. And then you're still letting this other part of us sit there and scroll through these moments because of our life.
And it's serving a purpose, or at least it has served.
Yes.
Right. And it still believes it's serving whatever purpose. And so, yeah. And
I think that's where the part two will come, that trickiness of I'm at the, what you said at the end there, where it has served and I know, and all the other parts know. And it's like, but we're still letting the baby have the tablet.
And what you need to do is like talk to that baby and find out like, why is it not willing to like, in the face of all the other parts, right? Why is it still holding on? Like because it is still serving in some way. And once you get to know, you can help that part go, oh, maybe I don't need to numb out so much anymore. The thing it was just the purpose it served is no longer here. I'm safe. I don't have to do that. And I think you've used the word without judgment or non-judgment a few times. And I think one of the things I so love about this whole idea of internal family systems is it's a non-judgmental way to look at all of ourselves, right? And there's so much that can shift internally when we just approach every part of ourselves with a sense of curiosity and compassion.
Yeah, I love that the four ingredients you bring up in the book. Gosh, there's so much that I would just want to, like, you know, like a vampire drain you. But people will go and read your book. And this is sort of the way I wanted to wind down anyway, was bringing up this idea of, you say in the book that joy and sorrow are sort of like next door neighbors. They go hand in hand, mm-hmm. and we don't think of them that way. And so in that idea that most people probably listening to Grief Club, the podcast, unless they're my mom, which even then she's in a grief process, you know, they're here with their grief. They are hand in hand, whether they want, and their sorrow probably, and everything that comes with that. So as the author of Joyful AF, what is one thing that you'd like to share with people that are coming that way?
So I talk a lot in the book. I have two thoughts that I'm going to hopefully tie together beautifully. We'll see. I talk a lot about, you know, joy is not toxic positivity. Joy is not about being in this wonderfully blissful high state all the time. Joy to me is being with all of our humanity. And there is joy in being, it doesn't necessarily feel that way, but there is joy in being with our sorrow and our grief and our pain. There is joy in failing, right? We talked about you need to fail. You need to have pain to, like, you know, have satisfaction. So there's this sense of, like, the more human you can be, the more joyful you'll feel. And so don't cut out all the bad things in service of joy. Welcome them in. And we've been having this IFS talk, so I want to share something that I shared in this IFS training that I was just in a few years ago. It's in the book, but I talk about, I was in this mastermind that Mandy Leto and I are part of, and we had an improv person come in, and she wanted us to write a 6-word memoir. Improv, right? So the first thing was, I did it all for my cat. I don't admit this in the book, but I did it all for my cat is actually 7 words, so I cheated.
I'm like counting the words.
Right. But then I had this download that just came to me. I thought I should be a little more serious. And it was, I sought joy. I found me. And then I realized the reverse was true. I sought me. I found joy. And back to this IFS thing, when you seek knowing you and your parts and all of them and what they're doing, and can come at it from a compassionate and curious and deeply connected to yourself way, that's when joy emerges. So if you seek understanding and knowing and loving more of you, you will feel more joy. And the more joy you feel, the more you will know you and feel you. Wonderful.
I love that. I love that. All right. As always, as we begin to wind down, I will honor the part of me that showed up very ferociously when this podcast idea came up. And that is the part that said, you go ahead and honor your journey, but at the end, we will find the funny, because that's what makes me want to be here. So I'm interested, what, it can be something you've watched recently, something that comes up, but where do you find the funny?
Oh my gosh, I find it funny in so many different things. I will tell you. Okay, so my IFS training I was just in, I had a partner that I was facilitating with, and we were texting a lot. And this is just a little funny anecdote. At some point, we were texting months ago, and my God, auto-corrected to my fox. And so we started just jokingly using my and then the fox emoji in our text. And this morning something happened, and I was like, in my head, my fox, this is hard. You would say this, my God. So now I am permanently, from now
I'm
on, God is a fox. God is a fox.
Let's hope. Let's hope. Yes. I've actually had a new part of me emerging, and I'm surprised I haven't brought this up yet because everybody hates me and wants me to shut up about it. But when I was in New York last month, I saw the show Titanic, which is basically this off-Broadway show that's sort of going viral right now. But it's what if Celine Dion was on the Titanic, the movie version of the story.
Oh my gosh.
And she basically tells that story using all of her music, but puts herself into the story. But I guess I'm late to the party, but, like, I did not know that Celine Dion is just, like, this bank of, like, hilarious one-liners and gestures and, like,
wow.
But there is, like, a part of me that is just, like, becoming like this little Addie Celine Dion, and it's just like my friends are like, stop doing that. But it's just like, because once it starts to click, like it's just like everything right now is coming back to Celine Dion. So I'm like in this like really weird stage of like self-discovery and like figuring out what lights me up and what I'm going to do next, but also just like 90% what would Celine Dion do?
I think that's a great question. And I love that. It also just reminded me, like I shared that my Fox story, because I find so much funny in like autocorrects, but in my house, we love Hannah Gadsby's Douglas comedy special. And there's a part where we quote her all the time, but every time the word "what if" comes out, and if anyone's seen Hannah Gadsby's show, she has a whole question where she learns that she was autistic. And she, because back in the day, she really got confused by prepositions, and she asked the teacher after a whole series of things, "What if the penguin ate the box?" And there's a whole buildup around it that I can't even repeat. But every time anyone in my house says "What if," we get in Hannah Gadsby voice, "What if the penguin ate the box?"
It's so funny. I can just like kind of grip to things, and they just they just deliver again and again and again. Yep. Well, guys, watch Hannah Gadsby, and if you're in New York, go see Titanic. I don't get paid to promote Titanic, but I'm working on it. Thank you so much for being here today. Joyful AF is available on Amazon, correct? Where else can we find you?
Yeah. So I will just say, if you're looking for it on Amazon, make sure you spell it joy-full, F-U-L-L. That was very intentional. And it's harder to find on Amazon. I should have thought of that. And then you can also find me right now. I'm speaking of TikTok and scrolling. I'm taking a break from social media. But if you do want to try to connect in DMs, at Dr. Erin M. Baker on Instagram works. And if anyone wants to like just check out and see what I do for, you know, the monies, you can see me at erinmbaker.com.
Yes, please do. Thank you so much for being here today. I appreciate so much. We'll see you soon.
Welcome. Bye.
Well, Grief Club, that's the show. If you enjoyed it, please let us know by liking and leaving a review. This will help as many people who may need what we're talking about find it the fastest. Remember to honor the journey. And when that gets tough, find the funny.